Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's our Pets and Vets program for the month. Here to take your calls, Dr. Ron Scharf from the All Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York. Dr. Scharf, a 1985 graduate of the Veterinary College at Cornell with an extensive background in veterinary medicine. Always nice to have Dr. Ron Scharf here. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. Or if you like Facebook, you can go there, comment. We have a Vox Pop wall post at WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. You can even email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Now, if you are using one of those electronic methods, give us as much information as you can on your pet, because Dr. Scharf can't follow up with questions, include the age, the sex, obviously what kind of pet you have, especially if you were submitting a question online. That's a very good way to go. But the number here to call, 1-800-348-2551. And Ron, it is a National Cat Day, but we're always happy to take dog questions too, right?
Dogs are very good too, actually. Not if you ask a cat person necessarily, but yes, National Cat Day is something that I had not heard about until Jessica Blasty Marshall just mentioned it.
I didn't know
so
either.
Thanks, Jessica.
This is very exciting.
I was looking it up. It looks like it's been going on for a few years, founded by this person to advocate for rescuing of all cats, finding forever homes for them. Always a good thing to devote some time to. Sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, dogs and cats sometimes get along just fine.
Oftentimes, dogs and cats get along nicely. It's not the kind of thing I necessarily expect, but often if they grow up together, they're more inclined to do that. If you introduce one of them after the other one's already been there, not as likely.
It's funny. I was dropping one of my children off at a friend's house the other day, and they had an older German Shepherd and two brand new kittens. And this dog doted on the kittens, and I said, well, that's strange. But apparently there had been a cat that had passed away in that dog's life. So the dog was very well acclimated to cats. They get along famously.
It's much more likely for a dog to accept a new cat than the other way around. It can happen if there's an incumbent cat that's been there and a new dog gets introduced. It's not that it can't happen, but I think that in some ways dogs are more easygoing as far as accepting strangers.
Cats have toots, I think.
Yes.
I've noticed that. All right, let's go right to the phones. Renee in Campbell Hall, you're up, Renee.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a little stray cat that we adopted about a year ago, and she's been diagnosed with stomatitis. Is there anything besides steroid shots that can help the stomatitis? Will she ever get rid of the stomatitis?
So, Renee, that's a particularly frustrating condition that cats often get, and there are other potential causes
for
it.
What is stomatitis?
Stomatitis, all that means, it's a inflammation of the oral cavity.
Ah.
Okay? Might affect the gums, might affect the tongue, might affect the roof of the mouth. Very painful, very inflamed, very angry looking. Mm-hmm. Now, there are those, Renee, who are subscribers of the Bartonella theory. There is a bacterium called Bartonella, which is the causative agent of cat scratch fever in people, that people who are scratched by cats, usually kittens, can get. So it is what we call a zoonotic disease. And a lot of people think that the Bartonella is one of the big causes of stomatitis. So if you diagnose it as a positive and put them on the appropriate antibiotic, that'll oftentimes get better.
Mm.
However, there are more cases, I think, of these conditions. They're inflammatory conditions, and they could be called lymphocytic plasmacytic stomatitis or eosinophilic stomatitis. And it is a possibility that it won't get better unless some drastic action is taken. And that drastic action sometimes can include up to and including the extraction of most, if not all, of the teeth.
Wow.
It is theorized that the body is having a reaction to its own dental structures. So no matter how much you clean those teeth, you take biopsies, this, that, the other thing, it's still going to happen. And that the steroids, the prednisone, is just reining in that overactive immune system. But they can have their own bad side effects. Putting a cat on long-term prednisone is carries its own risks.
Mm.
So that's it in a nutshell, Renee. It's a frustrating thing.
So I understand that the steroid can give liver damage. so I wouldn't want, I don't want to give her steroid shots. If the body, if the inflammation is going to attack the teeth, is once the teeth are gone, if they're all extracted, then the stomatitis goes away?
Yes.
Wow.
If that's what it is. A biopsy is always beneficial as far as getting a firm diagnosis. You don't know for a fact what you're dealing with or what you're treating without having some solid information behind you. So I would definitely recommend getting a biopsy so that you could get a diagnosis.
So if the cat has no teeth, and Renee, thank you for the call. If the cat has no teeth, the cat's okay? You don't need
yes.
kitty dentures of any kind?
Correct. There is no such thing.
All right.
Uh-huh. That I know of.
Okay. We got to get George Foreman on the line. You may have an invention there. Linda in Corinth. Linda, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two female cats, and the older one is 14. Her name is Sasha, and she's getting gaunt-looking, losing weight. Her eyes are looking, starting to sink in. And my question is a quality of care about passing on. I don't know what to do about it because she panics. She has a panic attack when I put her in the car. I mean, her tongue hangs out, and she, like, super hyper ventilates and everything, and then when I get into the vet, well, she's almost giving herself a stroke by the time I walk through the door. So is there anything that can be administered at home when it comes, when that's necessary? Because I want some peace of mind about this because I just don't know what to do.
I understand, Linda. Have you looked into using some kind of chill pills or tranquilizers to give
No.
her so that she's not as stressed going into the vet? It might pay to do that because if you don't have a diagnosis, you don't know what you're dealing with. And there are conditions that older cats can get that are either manageable or curable, depending upon whether it's a kidney disease or a thyroid disorder where they get too much thyroid. There are medications and ways that that could be fixed. So
none of that's affordable.
Well, as far as the at-home euthanasia, Linda, it can be done. It does require an injection. Okay, so that means
okay.
the veterinarian's got to do it. It's a barbiturate overdose. It's a good way to go if your time is up, but it does mean that a vein has to be held off and still. So someone's got to restrain the cat.
Okay.
Sometimes a sedative can be administered beforehand that'll relax the cat into a much more cooperative frame of mind, which I'll often do for my euthanasias. Very helpful. But you would need, and sometimes there are veterinarians that will do house calls. So you can have someone come into the house.
Okay. Great.
Thanks,
Linda.
You're welcome. Good luck.
14 seems awfully young.
Yes, it's not that old.
What's the average lifespan of a cat?
16.
16.
Yeah, okay. Some will get to 18 or 20 or even more. But I would assume 16 is like us getting to 80 or so.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest on this Pets and Vets edition of Vox Pop. Chuck in Albany. Chuck, you're on.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Ron.
I lost
a cat that was it was a pound kitty, 10 years old over the weekend. And, you know, we were talking about replacing him. And I've got a teenager in the house that's allergic to cats, but not to that cat. And so I've heard rumors that there's some species out there, that some varieties that are less likely to cause allergic reactions than others. So I'm wondering if you might give me a couple of hints on what to look for if I might get lucky and bring another cat in the house.
A hairless cat.
Really? It's the best you can do?
Aside from a hairless cat.
I, Chuck, don't personally know offhand about hypoallergenic cat breeds. I do know about hypoallergenic dog breeds. But I suspect that there are more than one kind of allergy that people can have to cats. So I don't know what allergens any given person's allergic to, but maybe some colleagues might know more about it. I can't think of any cat breeds that are guaranteed to be hypoallergenic. I do know that the major allergens that a person's usually allergic to are proteins in the saliva, and that because cats groom themselves, they get the saliva on the hair, and then the hairs float around the room. And that a lesser antigen would be the hair itself, the dander. So if there is an allergy, If there's a person that's allergic to cats, there will be less of an allergic reaction the better the cat is washed with a sponge, say, or a washcloth that's damp, so that their saliva that they groom themselves with could be washed off, and the more they're brushed, the fewer hairs they have floating around the room.
Yeah.
Of course, the better the ventilation is, that helps. As far as a breed that's absolutely not allergenic, can't help you.
Okay. Sorry, Chuck.
All right.
Good luck,
thanks,
Chuck. Sure thing.
I would imagine the shorter the hair, the better you are.
I would imagine, but I don't assume that to be the case.
Okay. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We will take a short break and be back with Dr. Ron Scharf. It's Pets and Vets.
Support for WMT comes from Valley Home Improvement, designing and building kitchens, bathrooms, interiors, and additions throughout the Pioneer Valley. Love your home. ValleyHomeImprovement.com. Dr. Joseph Cohen, optometrist, eye examinations and classic eyewear in historic Uptown Kingston, most insurances accepted, optical diversity in the Hudson Valley, CohenOptometry.com. Art Along the Hudson, this week, first Saturday events in Kingston, celebrating the arts in the Hudson Valley, ArtAlongTheHudson.com. The College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, presenting a concert season of various genres, including jazz, zydeco, funk, classical, and chamber music at the Massey Center for the Arts, strose.edu/concerts. And Henry's at the Farm Restaurant, Milton, New York, featuring seasonal produce, eggs, and honey from Buttermilk Falls Inn's own farm. Dinner Wednesday through Sunday, lunch Friday and Saturday, and Sunday brunch, Henry's at Buttermilk.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551 is the number, or voxpop@wamc.org is the email address here if you are having trouble getting through, and you may well be. All the lines are loaded at the present time. Avis, I hope I have pronounced that correctly, in Pitchtown, New York.
I got it, hon. Yes.
You're on. Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hi, you're on.
All right. I have a beagle.
All right, fair enough.
And she's 3 years old. She rubs her back, scratches her back on everything. I rolls on the floor, scratches on the bed and on the chairs, and it looks like she's hurting, but she doesn't seem to be hurting. And I took her to the vet, and the vet did some checking. He says that can be caused by thyroid problem. So he checked that, and that all come back all right. And then he tells me that it's the water she's drinking. The water has got too much calcium in it.
Okay.
So I went and bought a filter for the water, so she gets nothing but filtered water, with, you know, all this stuff supposedly taken out. But I can't stop her from drinking out of mud puddles and drinking out of the brook.
Yeah.
She's an outside dog when she wants to be. It's very difficult. Would you have any other suggestions that could possibly be?
I do have an idea, Avis, but I want to know, does your beagle have any bald spots or red rashy spots, or is it just that she's rubbing it?
No, she's got a spot down by her tail, right by her, not her rectum, but right at her tail and her back.
Yeah.
And it seems like her tail is swollen there. But he looked at that and he said, no, he didn't think that was a problem.
She doesn't have fleas, Avis?
No, no fleas.
Okay. I would think if it's not a parasite like a flea, I would wonder about allergies. Allergies in animals, particularly dogs, show up mostly as an itch, and that itch could be anywhere, but the trunk is very common, and the tail base is not unusual either. The most common place for a flea allergy is right on top of the tail, on the rump back there, but even if there are no fleas, doesn't mean that the dog can't be either breathing something in that's allergic to or eating something that it's allergic to.
Well, so, I've given her Benadryl several times, and that didn't seem to do anything.
That makes the allergy theory less likely, but it doesn't necessarily rule it out, because sometimes the antihistamines, you did the right thing, but sometimes they're not strong enough. And prednisone is what we use for really bad allergies. Now, whether it's justified...
He did give her a shot of that when she was in there.
Okay.
And she did seem better for 3 or 4 days.
There you go. So if she's responding to cortisone, the tempting thing would be to say she's got an allergy, though I do have to admit, with the Cornell training that I got at the vet school, they say that you can't say that response to cortisone means they're allergic. You can only say that they have a pred-responsive situation. So usually, though, realistically, that means an allergy.
Mm.
So I would watch Avis for any seasonal variation. If you're seeing it being constant year-round, you're probably talking about a food allergy. If you're seeing things that are more in certain seasons, such as fall and spring, than other seasons, you're more likely looking at an allergic inhalant dermatitis, or you know, something the dog's breathing in. And there are ways to deal with that. You don't have to use prednisone. There are other things besides Benadryl. There are sprays. There are topicals. That's what we're going more to nowadays, because that prednisone with long-term use, as a previous caller knew, can cause major side effects. So,
what was that last thing you said?
That prednisone can have it can have bad side effects. So we're trying more and more in the veterinary field, Davis, to use more topical things that have less likelihood of being risky.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the call, Avis. We appreciate it. So, following up on one part of the call, he said the vet originally said it could have been too much calcium in the water. Explain how that could cause itching on the back.
Can't explain it.
So you can't explain it. It may well be, but you can't explain it. Have you ever seen anything like that?
No.
Okay, let's go to Ron in Orange County. Ron.
Hi. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Okay. I have a two German Shepherds. One is 10 months old. She's a female, and she's not fixed yet. My wife is showing her and stuff, and the dog is bleeding, and she's okay, everything. Sometimes she's put a diaper on or whatever. She's only 10 months old. But I said to her, why don't you get her spayed already? She said she has to go through two more cycles before you get the dog spayed. Is that a bunch of crap or what?
Nah. Okay. Well put.
Ron, a very, very complicated answer to your question. The bottom line of which we don't have a bottom line, and I'll tell you why. First of all, up until about 2 years ago, the only thing we knew with science as far as the best time to spay a dog was that if you spay a dog before their first heat, then their chances of getting a mammary cancer, which is the most common cancer in a dog, are 1/7 that of the population. And if you spay them before their second heat, then their chances were 1/3 that of the population. So all vets were recommending that all dogs get spayed at 6 months unless they were going to be bred or shown. Now, what happened a couple of years ago out of Davis in California is they showed that in a certain breed, which in that original study was Golden Retrievers, that spaying or neutering the males or spaying the females early, okay, before a year, produced dogs that got a higher incidence of certain, certain cancers and one or two kinds of joint problems.
Hmm.
And so at that point, it started getting a little more complicated. And so what you're saying as far as having to skip two cycles to me sounds like folk wisdom that has not been substantiated by science. So I would say that, no, you don't have to wait two cycles in order to spay the dog. But you always want to give the dog a wide range of time after the last heat before you do that surgery. Because if you spay a dog close to their next or close after their last heat, then the surgery is more risky, more dangerous, takes longer.
So what do you suggest she do?
I suggest if you're going to spay her, you wait 2 months after her last heat.
Okay, so what, she's only going to get a heat one more time?
Why would you want the last heat?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just like, in other words, after this cycle, after this cycle, she can get spayed, right?
as far as I know. I don't see any, I don't know of any benefit to letting another cycle go by before you do it.
But wait 2 months.
I would wait 2 months, at 2 or 3 months after the last heat, but otherwise, I don't see any timing factors at play.
Okay, Ron, thank you very much for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Dr. Ron Scharf is here. John in Canaan, you're on.
Hi there. I have a 10-year-old Sealyham Terrier. Very healthy in general, but he has a seemingly chronic condition in his eyes that they're not, which are not inflamed, although they have been in the past. They're not reddish, but they produce on a consistent basis quite a lot of black, unpleasant goo, which can crust up around his eyes. My vet has prescribed some kind of ointment in a tube to soften the goo so that it can be pulled off, and has suggested that I use warm cloths to soften it and pull it off. You can imagine the dog doesn't like either of those treatments very much. And it seems like it's really needs to be done every 2 or 3 days, which is also not so pleasant for me. Mm. What I'm wondering is there anything in your mind? He's been given a course of antibiotics when his eyes were inflamed. And so I'm kind of wondering whether there's anything in your mind that would bear on what his condition might be, how to treat it, or if there's nothing to do to treat it, how to better loosen this
goo
around his eyes. Yeah.
Okay. So, John, you didn't say whether or not it was bothering the dog or had any other symptoms.
It does bother him, and I mean, if it crusts up around his eyes, and it's difficult to see.
Okay. So it does bother him, and it goes all the way around both eyes.
Eyes on the bottom of both eyes.
Just on the bottom. Mm-hmm. And before it gets, when it first comes out, it's got to be in a liquid form. Is there any color to it, or is it just a clear silver mucus, or is there any yellow or green? Or
never seen any yellow or green, so perhaps it's clear.
Okay, so there's got to be a cause for it, John, and you want to start looking into things. Is the dog making enough tears? That's a very simple thing to do in any vet's office. You want to see if there are any hairs growing out at the wrong angle. In other words, the hairs mm-hmm. that are coming out of the eyelid margin might be pointing in the wrong direction and poking the dog. You want to see if the nasal lacrimal ducts, those are the tear ducts that drain the tears, are plugged or not. There are many potential causes for what you're saying. They could be anatomic, they could be infectious, they could be any sorts of things. And then if your GP vet can't figure it out, there is also an ophthalmologist that you can go to. I don't know that you necessarily need to from what I hear so far. But the cleaning is good as far as hygiene's sake, John, and also to prevent it from getting worse so that it would be uncomfortable for the dog. So even if you were to take your finger or even a damp cotton ball is even better on a daily basis and wash it out, it prevents all that kicking up. It's not curing it, of course, but at least it's a way to make the dog feel more comfortable and get a diagnosis. Measure the tear production. Take a look, you know, have a vet or an ophthalmologist or both take a look with an ophthalmoscope to see if there are any little hairs poking through, to see if there are any. Sometimes there are corneal disorders. Sometimes there are things that's the outer layer of the globe itself that has a problem. And gather some information. There should be a diagnosis in there somewhere, John.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Good luck.
John, thank you very much. So I would imagine that checking to see whether a tear duct is draining properly is not something you can do at home.
No, you can't do it at home. As a matter of fact, on an awake dog in the vet's office, you might not be able to do it because you have to take what's called a cannula. Mm-hmm. It's a metal thing that's hollow, but it's about smaller than a pencil lead in diameter. And you have to find that thing,
boy.
Which is not easy. It doesn't hurt. But if you're doing that on a awake dog and they make a sudden move
poke
or
in
something,
the eye.
It could be real bad.
Yeah,
that
I
could
see.
Happen. They could rip the nasal lacrimal duct, whatever. So I prefer doing that kind of thing under sedation.
That's not a bad idea. All right, let's go. Oh, I know this person. It's Wanda Fisher. Hi, Wanda. You're on.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Dr. Scharf, I have a dachshund who's about 10 years old, and last month he lost his pal, who was almost 18 years old. And the pal that he lost was also a dachshund, and the dachshund who passed away was kind of deaf and blind, and the surviving dachshund was basically his seeing eye dog. And now he has no company, and he's been acting very strangely since he doesn't have another dog. And he does things like he'll stand and bark all the, you know, he just stands there and barks. He's very needy. And we have a controversy. This is like calling car talk. We have a controversy in our house because I think he needs to get another companion, and my husband says that he doesn't need another companion. But I think he's acting like he's lonely, and I think that there needs to be another dog in the house. Is this something that he seems like he's in mourning? Is this something that you would think that dogs go into mourning?
In general, Wanda, I would say no, because the vast majority of dogs, I ask people when a long-term buddy has gone, how is the other dog or dogs doing? And in general, I think after several days, they kind of settle back into being, they're not wistful anymore. I just had the assumption that the vast majority of dogs did not have the intellectual capacity to pine over how things used to be.
Okay.
However, I would not be surprised if it were the case, especially if your two doxies were very close, and the surviving one, the 10-year-old, was a service dog, so to speak,
yeah.
For the other one, that served a... I would imagine that it's very conceivable that could have served a fulfilling purpose in the 10-year-old's life that now it feels a little lost at. I would not say that that's out of the question.
What about another dog, though?
Another dog is the question. Another dog may or may not help, because the other dog, if it's the companionship that the 10-year-old's missing, then, yeah, another dog might help. But if it's the function, not the function, but the feeling of being needed and helping and being a service dog, so to speak, for the companion is not there, if the other dog you get doesn't need that seeing eye dog or doesn't need that help, then it may not necessarily address your pining dogs, the 10-year-old's barking, and et cetera. That's a tough one. I would try to, 10 years old is not that old for a doxy. If assuming that he or she is in good shape, take him for as much exercise as you can, try to occupy him, try to fill that time to the extent that you or your family can, and give him something to distract him between the exercise and the distractions, and try to maybe teach him some new tricks, some obedience, so that he'll feel like he's fulfilling a function. A lot of dogs like that. A lot of dogs think, you know, it's kind of inbred. If they're a Australian Shepherd, they're just in. It's hardwired for them to want to herd things, kind of thing.
Yeah, they need a job.
Yeah,
well,
yes.
The thing about it is with this dog is that he stands there and he barks, and now I'm worried because he's gaining weight because my husband keeps giving him treats. And you got to watch that with dachshunds. So
absolutely.
Okay. Well, I will take that your counsel into consideration. I was thinking about adopting another dog, another senior dog that was about his age, and you know, that might make a good thought.
A good place that would adopt a dog, Wanda, I would think would give you a week's trial period, so that if it didn't work out, then you have recourse. But another thing, I don't know if it would help, but it surely wouldn't hurt, is something called a dog appeasing pheromone (DAP).
Uh-huh.
That is often good for inner dog friction, but in this case, it's a kind of a social thing also, I'm wondering. But like I said, there's no downside to getting some DAP. But I would try out another dog, but I would not assume beyond any doubt that it would solve the problem.
What about a dog that couldn't see?
Another blind dog.
Yeah.
That might work.
Couldn't see may or may not relate to the 10-year-old like the last dog.
Okay, all right.
So it's iffy. It might help. Hard to say. I would love to know what happens.
Yeah, tell us on the Hudson River sampler how it worked out, Wanda.
I will.
Thank you.
Good luck. Thanks a lot.
Bye now. Let's go over to Greg in Albany. Greg.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have an 18-and-a-half-year-old Bichon Frise. Now, her name is Chancey. I've had her since I was 11 years old. And she's there's a new baby in the house. Baby's 8 days old. And Chansey, when we put the baby to bed, and then the baby wakes up and cries, Chansey starts barking. And it's causing our lack of sleep from the new baby to get even worse. We tend to keep Chansey in the mudroom at night so that when she gets up to walk around, she bumps into a few things but finds her bed quicker than if she was in a bigger space. She's only been completely blind for about a year, but she had one eye since she was about 12 because of glaucoma. And we're looking for some sort of way to help her sleep, possibly medication. Not sure what a good method is.
Okay.
So there is medication, Greg, but it would be the last recourse. I wouldn't think of it first. Before I would do that, I would wonder, I don't know what the layout of your house is, but could you put Chansey in a room that has no windows where you'll be less likely to hear that baby crying, and also put some music on in that room so if there were a mild cry going on, he might not be as prone to hear it. Is that at all possible?
We live in a 1,000 square foot ranch. It's a very small house, and with thin panel doors, I'm not sure how well noise reduction would work. Mm. We can obviously give it a try, but it's a small house and you hear everything.
And you need sleep. I mean, with a new baby, you got to get some sleep.
You might be looking at some medication like Xanax or something for the dog, Greg.
What about Benadryl?
Well, Benadryl could make them drowsy. That's a possibility, too. I don't see any major downsides to trying. It's not the kind of thing that you reach for a drug whose side effect is producing what you need, but I don't see that much downside to it, as long as it wasn't too drowsy.
Greg, we got to go take a break here. Thank you for calling, and good luck with the
Greg.
New baby and the old dog. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. More with Ron Scharf coming up on Pets and Vets.
Support for WMC comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Winslow Homer, The Nature and Rhythm of Life, through January 4th, 2015, arkellmuseum.org. H. Houston Sun True Value Hardware and Just Ask Rentals, Woodstock, New York, providing energy-saving ideas for home winterizing since 1932. Behind every project is a true value. HHoust.com. Saratoga Bridges, Boston Spa, New York. A community resource for people with disabilities and their families, supported employment, day services, and more. SaratogaBridges.org. And University at Albany, offering a weekend MBA program for 22 months, including a study abroad session. 518-956-8330.
One 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Dr. Ron Scharf is here on this National Cat Day, and what a festive day it is. Will I have to celebrate, get a pizza for the cat? Linda in West Paulette, Vermont. Linda, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, I have she's almost 9 years old, a yellow lab that just loves poop.
Oh, boy. We had to have one of those in the show. All right. Thank you.
You probably would have liked the cat question. Instead.
No, that's fine. You got the dog poop question in, so we're all set for the show. What do you think, Ron?
Is this his or her own, or is this anybody's?
Oh, for Pete's sake.
She will eat her own, but then I have another dog also, and she will eat his.
Okay. There are various things, Linda, you could put in the food that is supposed to impart a taste to the poop that gives them second thoughts about doing it again.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it works, I'd say 30-40% of the time. One of the ones is called Forbid, Forbid. It's a vegetable protein, so it's harmless as far as I know. You put a few packets in the food for 2 or 3 days. You would have to do it for both dogs. Now, in general, the conventional wisdom, Linda, is that you need to pick up the poop immediately so that they don't have the opportunity. But
yeah,
if you're going to be doing this vegetable protein, that's the time that you don't want to pick up the poop because you want them, you want her to have that unpleasant experience. That'll give her second thoughts. And then if you have it for 2 or 3 days running, that might talk her out of it. I've heard of situations where it does not work also. The bottom line is you need to pick up the poop if you really want to stop the problem.
Yes, my husband, he does do that, but sometimes you may miss some. And
yeah. Well, especially this time of year.
Yeah.
It's like totally camouflaged with all the leaves coming down.
Yes. Yeah, that's what happens.
Sure.
And so where do I purchase for bid?
Oh, I would just go online, go to Amazon or your vet or somewhere and just put in forbid powder or vegetable protein, and it'll probably come up, I would imagine.
Okay.
And the vet, your vet might have a different kind, similar thing.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. I hope that
good
will.
Good luck, Linda. All right.
Yeah, and I appreciate the call very much.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. That's done. All right. Vincent and Troy. Vincent, you're on.
Gentlemen, happy cat day.
Hey, Vincent.
Yeah, right back at you.
So I have a 5-year-old blue nose pit bull, very sweet dog, but she has major dermatological skin allergies. Can't seem to figure out what it is. Definitely worse in the spring. However, we tried changing the food, but she ends up with all these little hot spots. Anywhere she can nibble away at her skin, she has gotten to the point of opening wounds on her, like her knees or underneath where her belly is. So I'm not really sure where to take it from here. We give her quite a bit of Benadryl, which our vet says is okay, but I feel like it's not a long-term solution.
Right.
Curious what your thoughts are.
Well, there are a lot of things that you could use, Vincent, but before I get into them, there is a way to find out what they're allergic to, either by a blood test or going to a dermatologist to do a skin test, an intradermal skin test. I do use the blood test, and it'll give you, in this part of the country, the most common allergens that a dog could be breathing in, as well as it can give you the most common food ingredients that they might be eating. Now, if you say she's worse in the spring, I'm thinking that the greatest likelihood is that she has an inhalant or allergic inhalant dermatitis, otherwise known as atopy. Now, someone with an allergy to something they're breathing in can also have a food allergy, okay? But worse in the spring says they're breathing something in. So if you do the blood test, sometimes you'll find out on things that you might be able to do something about, or you'll be able to formulate allergy shots, what they call immunotherapy, and you're going to have two out of three dogs are going to get better with immunotherapy allergy shots, though you have to give it at least a year or a year and a half to work. So you're talking a bit of an effort. But other than that, there are three or four things I'm going to tell you about. First of all, just plain old fatty acids. Okay.
Right.
The fatty acids, the fish oil I'm talking about, has anti-inflammatory properties. Okay. Not dramatic, but something. Number one. Number two, you combine that with the antihistamine, which the Benadryl is fine. The one I carry is chlorpheniramine, which is generic chlortrimetan. It's similar, but it's dirt cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The third thing is a product line that I like and use a lot called the company's. The product is called Duxo, D-O-U-X-O.
Right.
It's a French company called Sojaval, and they make several different formulations, a shampoo, a spray, a mousse. The mousse is very popular, but it's providing an ingredient that's missing from the skin of an allergic dog. Okay, so just using the fatty acids, the antihistamine, and the Duxo is going to lower that baseline. So in other words, you still have an allergic dog, but they might not be as allergic. So when the worst part of the season comes, say at the worst part of the spring in your case or your pup's case, then if you need to use a couple weeks' worth of prednisone, it's not the worst thing in the world. However, there's also topical sprays that have some prednisone that might make it less likely that you have to use oral prednisone. We were talking to an early caller about the potential downsides to using long-term pred.
Right.
It could cause bad news, you know, and liver disease and diabetes, et cetera. But if you only have to use it a couple weeks or a couple times a year, it's not so bad. But using the spray that has a corticosteroid, in addition to those three more nutraceutical-type things, they're not drugs, the fatty acids, et cetera, might help alleviate the condition. So
okay.
It's A, trying to find out what she's allergic to, B, trying those three things, the fatty acids, the antihistamine, and the Duxo product to lower the baseline. And then at the worst part of the season, use either a spray or an oral prednisone for a few weeks. Hopefully that'll do it. But so far, there's no cure for an allergy, Vincent. So that's what you do. Those pits do have sensitive skin. Is this a white dog? Can I assume?
I think he's gone. Yeah, I'm sorry. Vincent's
gone.
Vincent's gone.
All right,
thank you for the call, Vincent. We appreciate it. Colleen in New Hampshire. Colleen, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You're
Hi,
on.
Colleen.
Good. I have two questions. The first one, it should be pretty simple answer. You were talking about dogs and an ophthalmologist earlier. We picked up a dog at an SPCA a couple of months ago, and in one of her eyes, I think she was abused as a puppy, but I'm not sure if this is what caused it. It's like white crystals all collected like behind the lens of the eye. I forget what they actually called it. There's a different word. But so they said she could mostly see shadows. But I was wondering if, you know, if that's something, it almost looks like little salt crystals back there.
Sure.
If that's something that can be scraped out, taken out, or anything like that.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm assuming that you're talking something in the lens, okay? If the lens has opacities, it's not an uncommon thing, Colleen. And just like in people, the lens could be taken out. And if you take it out, then more light is allowed to get to the retina. Dog's going to see more than shadows.
Okay, great. Yeah, because she doesn't really like to be come at by her face. She,
sure.
You know, is all about it. Second question. We do live in New Hampshire. Last winter was pretty bad, pretty cold.
Yeah.
With the vortex and all that, too. But so we've collected two stray male cats that started coming around intermittently, and then we were feeding them outside regularly. They were living under the barn or under our neighbor's barn. It was hard to get them to come inside. Well, come this spring, they've decided that it's a pretty nice place to be, and now they come in the house and they sleep on the couch and the bed, and you know they're very acclimated. The only problem now, we have one female cat, and on their own, they both like the cat, they like the dog, but the two of them together don't like each other. The one is still a little bit shy about being picked up, so I have not been able to get him to the vet to get him neutered.
Hmm.
The other, I was able to get him neutered, get all his shots. You know, they can sit together in a room for a short period of time, and then the growling starts,
yeah.
And then it's like a Garfield cartoon. The last time it happened, like through the whole house, there's air flying.
Sounds like my kids, really, is what it sounds like.
Did you say that one's female and one's male, or they're both male?
Our original cat, is a little female. Both of these strays are male, and they get along with our female cat pretty good on their own.
They
don't get along with each other. Now, we're trying to find a home for one of the male cats that seems more domesticated. The other one, I don't think we'll ever find a home for him anywhere else. And we'd keep them all if they got along, but right now it's like, okay, if this one's on the porch, then that one can be in the house, and if this one's outside,
right.
That in the house, or if this one's in the basement, shut the door. And so it's really a lot when you've got three cats, two dogs, and all
right.
That.
And the female cat doesn't get along with one of the strays, or one of the strays doesn't get along with the female cat?
It's the two male strays that really don't get along with each other.
Oh, that's weird. And one of them's unneutered.
Right, because I have not been able. I was able to get him in the box finally last week, the little cat carrier. But by the time I was on the phone with the vet going, I got him in the box, can I bring him over? He is like a beast, and he burst out. He blew the front door of it. Just kept begging.
Whoa.
Him popped out.
Wow.
And I did get a bigger box from the vet's office, so we're going to try that. But,
cool.
But with the hormones, is there, you know, I asked them originally, if I get one of them neutered and I can't get the other one neutered right away, is it going to be a problem? Or any ideas how to... I mean, we'd love to keep them all. They're on their own. They're good
sure.
cats.
Okay.
Well, so, yeah, definitely it would be... key, Colleen, if you could get that other cat neutered. There are too many hormones going on, number one. Number two, this pheromone that I've mentioned on the show many times called Feelaway, F-E-L-I-W-A-Y, will sometimes take a little bit of the edge off on this intercat friction.
Yeah.
Okay, but in this case, from what you're saying, that might not be enough.
Neutering has to be done.
You got to get that intact male neutered. And then just tincture of time, you know, between getting that cat neutered, using the feel away, doing your situational changes, like to the extent that you can, putting one cat out, one cat in, and rotating. you know, trying to give them each their space where they don't have to deal with the other one. There's usually one that's an aggressor and one that's not. So worst case scenario, I think you could use a drug if you had to, you know, like a Prozac kind of thing.
All right.
That's a last thing that you reach for, though.
All right. Colleen, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Judy in Gloversville. Judy.
Hi. Mine's just a quick question. I have a number of dogs. I have 5 dogs, and they all get along fine, but they sit, somebody will be laying down, and another dog will come up and start just licking them, and now they're all licking each other.
Oh, boy.
And it just, they lick on their back or their head or wherever they happen to be, and they just stand there a few minutes and lick away. Is there a problem with that?
No, there's no problem. It sounds like you have a good YouTube there.
All right.
But I don't see any problem at all. I mean, it sounds sweet, actually, Judy. They're all taking care of each other. They're grooming each other. And now, you sure that there's no parasites or any kind of lice that they might be?
No, they all get groomed and they all, you know, get taken care of. But they just seem to like that. And I just didn't know if there was one dog started and now they all do it.
So usually we get these calls that are very challenging because they're problems. Here we have a very harmonious situation and you're wondering if it's a problem. I don't think so at all.
Well, that's
great. It sounds great.
Oh, fine.
Thanks for letting us know. That's a good thing to hear, Judy.
It's an easy one.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Judy. Over to John in Hyde Park. John, you're on.
Hey, Ray, it's John Fisher. How are you?
Hey.
Doctor, we have a 9-year-old female Rottweiler who has been digging at a hole under one of our shrubs and is eating the dirt and the rocks in it. Unfortunately, the 6-month-old Rottweiler puppy is following her lead.
Oh.
And I've looked carefully to see if there are grubs or something that they're eating, but I just can't see anything other than the fact that it's dirt and rocks in the same place that they're eating. And I covered it with a tarp and some big rocks, but is there anything that we could do to stop them from wanting to eat the dirt in the first place?
Well, I heard many years ago, John, I don't know if it'll work, but one person once told me the way to do it is to bury some balloons.
You're kidding me.
It's a deterrent. Is it humane? I'm going to reserve judgment on that. But you got to, you know, if every few digs there's going to be a little pop, you know, I guess that the 9-year-old can acclimate and realize it's no big deal. Besides that, I think you need the supervision, John. I think leaving them out by themselves, you're not going to be able to put up a sign they're going to read saying don't dig. So I think you got to be out there. It's the only way you're going to be able to do something about it.
Well, we'll see how the tarp with the rocks works for now. And
yeah.
If that works, I'll be happy. But
yeah, good luck.
I'll just start watching.
John, we got to get you on Food Friday one of these days. We'll do a mixology show.
You bet. I'm ready.
All right. Thanks a lot. John is a cocktail expert at CIA.
Oh, okay.
And he taught me a few things about martinis at one point off mic. But he said, listen, you should not shake your martinis. You're ruining the gin.
Stir.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like 007?
Clear.
I know you said shake, not stir.
Well, we're off topic. Anthony in Schenectady. Anthony, you're on.
Hi, yes. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My girlfriend and I just took in a stray that had been coming around, and we had been feeding him, and I noticed that he had a wound on his paw. So we took him in and got the wound all patched up. We found that he had a roundworm, so we got that taken care of. And a week ago, we just got him neutered. And I've noticed that he's been having bouts of pretty severe diarrhea with some normal stools in between. We weren't sure if it's, stress from a whole new environment and food, or if it could be something more serious. I did get his stool checked this morning, and our vet confirmed that the roundworm had been cleared up and no other parasites were found. So we weren't sure what our next step should be.
Okay, we have about 45 seconds, Doc.
Well, Anthony, I'd like to know, could the cat possibly, this is a cat, right?
Correct.
And the cat's not getting into any kind of rich food or any kind of stuff that it's eating that you might not know about or that the kids might be feeding or anything like that?
We keep him in his own separate room, which is rather large, but we just give him the same food every day.
You know what I would do, Anthony, despite the fact that you've had one or two negatives on the fecal, I would assume maybe it's a false negative, and I would just treat him with the most broad-spectrum stuff I had and just, empirically try to get that out of the way. And if you know for a fact that it's not eating something wrong, I'm hard-pressed to answer why it's intermittent, Anthony. Mm. I don't know why sometimes it's bad and sometimes it's good. It kind of suggests that it's situational, like it's eating something it shouldn't. But I guess there are internal problems that could be intermittent as well, though less likely.
Okay.
So you might have to do more diagnostics.
All right. That is where we will have to leave it. Dr. Ron Scharf, thank you so much for being here. What's your website at the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna?
Our website, Ray, is animalhospitalniskayuna.com.
All right, sir. Thanks for being here. Thanks to everybody who called in today. We really had a good time, learned quite a bit. Support comes from Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors, serving the Northeast since 2001. StoneSoupConcrete.com and on Facebook. The Odyssey Bookshop, South Hadley. Bob Herbert will sign and discuss Losing Our Way, an intimate portrait of a troubled America, tonight at 7 p.m., Gamble Auditorium, Mount Holyoke College, odysseybks.com, and Hampshire Veterinary Hospital, corner of University Drive and Route 9 in Amherst, Massachusetts, reminding listeners that black pepper-like specks in pets' coats indicate the presence of fleas. Hampvet.com. Thanks to Zach Malloy for handling the controls. Colleen O'Connell answered the calls. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, yeah, fall is coming, but we'll do a gardening show all the same. Fred Breglia and Greg Ward will be here. Stay tuned now for a news update.